since its inception as a separate service in 1947, the Air Force has maintained a chief scientist office that's a direct scientific and technical advisor to the chief of staff and the secretary of the Air Force. So we're a two-letter air staff level office, and our purpose is to give independent, objective advice to the top levels of the Air Force. That includes the chief and the secretary, as well as all of the air staff level offices, on all matters that involve science and technology. So that includes the whole research, development, test, and evaluation process, the acquisition functions. We work a lot with the Air Force Research Laboratory, but also with the other services, with industry, with universities, and even worldwide. So it's a pretty broad scope that we cover.
Wow, that's way more than I expected. I didn't realize you worked with so many different, not just agencies, but entities.
Yeah, it is an amazing job. I'll tell you, we're intentionally a small office. The words I just mentioned a moment ago about independent and objective advice are really central to understanding the role that this office plays. The idea is that the advice that we give the secretary and the chief need to be free from any motivations of protecting our own budget or an empire. So we are a small office. We work by collaborating constructively with other pieces of the Air Force and the other services, and as I just said, broadly with industry and with universities. So pretty amazing position, I agree.
And that position also requires then you to be able to speak truth to power. Is that a hard thing to do?
Well, not really. I mean, the office is filled by someone who comes, as I said earlier, from outside the government, usually from a university or from one of the federally funded research and development centers. So these are people who have their careers in the research field and are really used to being able to put the research truth, if you will, front and center, and then all other considerations flow from that. So you're right that is the way this office works, and the people who fill it really are used to that spirit, if you will.
So walk me through what it is as far as the types of technologies and scientific issues that you have to analyze, the technical issues. Are we talking strictly nuts and bolts type things? Do you go as far as things like Web 2.0 technologies? Tell me a bit about that.
Absolutely. It is amazing how broad an area we have to cover. So, first of all, anything that's on the mind or is likely to come onto the radar screen of the Secretary and the Chief, that's our front and center objective. We have to anticipate what those issues are going to be and inform ourselves on them so that we can give them the advice that they need. Then beyond those issues, obviously anything that they direct us to look at, we'll do a deep dive on and try to get the information that we can give them the advice on. But most of our time in practice is spent in self-motivated areas, if you will. So we look across all of the things that are likely to be relevant to the Air Force and try to give advice on those where we can. Over this past year, I can give you a pretty good list of some things that we have looked at, starting with hypersonics for future ISR platforms and strike roles. And that includes reusable air breathing, hypersonic access to space vehicles. That's been an area that the Air Force has invested in for quite some time, and we're about to have some test flights coming up that are going to be really important there. We go into sensors and sensor technologies, including high-altitude airships with literally football field-size radars on them that can stay aloft continuously. They're unmanned. They stay aloft continuously for 10 years. It gives you an unimaginable detailed look into how our adversaries operate and allow us to function better in the other kinds of missions that the Air Force does. Electronic warfare technologies and counter-EW is a big and growing area. Energy efficiency is one that we've certainly dived into. The Air Force Research Labs have a very large and important program called the Versatile Affordable Advanced Turbine Engine Program. And that is developing a whole host of technologies that are going to reduce fuel use and allow us to have longer endurance engines with lower signatures. UAV is obviously a big topic for the Air Force right now. We've looked into a variety of platform concepts, engine technologies for long endurance, low observability, how to pack sensors into those. You know, we jam-pack our aircraft now with all kinds of electronics, and they produce tremendous amounts of heat. And even you mentioned nuts and bolts, Amy. Even managing the heat that's rejected from those kinds of platforms. In vehicles now that are all buttoned up for LO reasons, for low observability reasons, makes it really hard just to get even these mundane things, like getting the heat off the platform is very, very tough. Space protection, certainly cyber warfare, network protection, it goes across a huge spectrum of things, and that's really part of what makes the position so exciting. You get to learn a lot, and you can tap into expertise all across the Air Force and try to both learn from that and help guide that in the best way possible.
Do you ever find yourself in the position of providing the advice or the guidance and then perhaps the powers that be decide they don't want to go that way? Does that put you in an awkward position, or does that not usually happen?
No, so awkward, I wouldn't say at all. Our job, as I said, is to give independent objective advice, and in some cases that means we need to increase our activities in certain areas. In other cases, it means we say, you know what, that area is about as mature as the technology is likely to let it get. And so the Secretary-in-Chief count on us to give both sides of the coin, if you will. And we have to be willing to do that without worrying about any awkwardness that might flow from that. I do find, in response to the first part of your question, you know, the Air Force has a deep bench, if you will, in science and technology. There are a lot of expertise within the laboratories and more broadly. And so more often than not, we find ourselves adding to, if you will, or providing an alternative perspective that augments what the Air Force is already doing in some areas. In rare cases, there'll be areas that are missed, or you know, things that are being considered for investment that may not make sense from a technical point of view. And so certainly we provide that filter function, but that's not our primary role. We're really here to try to make sure that the Air Force gets the most capability it can out of its S&T investments.
Let's talk a bit about you and the qualifications that you bring to this. I know that you have a background in mechanical engineering and also in aeronautics. Do you consider yourself an aeronautical engineer, a mechanical engineer? What do you consider yourself?
Well, prior to coming into this position, and as I said earlier on, this position is usually filled by, it's always filled by someone who comes from outside the government. They serve here temporarily, typically 2 to 3 years. In my case, I'm a professor of aerospace engineering at the University of Michigan. I've been there the past 25 years. My formal background is mechanical engineering and aeronautics. Within that domain, I really work on physics-related issues, primarily associated with air vehicles and propulsion systems. So I certainly bring that expertise into, or direct expertise into, the field. But I've been working with the Air Force Scientific Advisory Board and the Defense Science Board and other defense science advisory agencies for quite some time. Part of what I find exciting about this position is that you can get into areas that are much broader than your own direct expertise. And as I said earlier, by tapping into the existing capabilities of the Air Force, you can come up to speed very quickly on these things. You know, as scientists, I like to say while we exercise our scientific knowledge in a particular domain, a real scientist is someone who can come up to speed and be productive very quickly on a new area, any areas that are related to S&T. So that's really, in my opinion, the most exciting part of this office is the fact that you are expected to speak on a wide range of issues, and it gets you much beyond the narrow areas that you might have worked on previously.